And we are live. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, Tim Kearns, Matt Williams, and Phil Stacey, in no particular order, as we are at the Salem News. And I want to bring on my partner here, Bill Newell, and Tim Kearns as well. Tim with us every single week. That's right, when you're not away. But, Bill, maybe you could explain what's going on here tonight.
All right, so we're live.
You got to bring that up a little more. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, how about that?
Perfect,
okay.
Perfect.
Just got to twist my mouth down towards this thing.
Don't hurt your neck.
Yeah, there you go. We're at the Salem News offices in Beverly, but that's where we're at with Phil Stacey, sports editor of the Salem News, and Matt Williams, who's all around the North Shore and beyond.
Assistant sports editor.
Is he really?
Yes.
Nice.
Titles are meaningless, but okay.
Well-deserved, I should say. Assistant sports editor.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Boy,
yeah.
This guy knows soccer. He knows football, hockey.
He knows it all.
He knows it all, yeah.
I could have him do a gymnastics meet up in Maine, although I'd never do that to him. But if I needed him to, he'd do it with a smile on his face and come back with a great story.
We just send Gene instead.
Well, we're here to talk Thanksgiving football. So we've got certainly a lot of the games that looks like a lot of great games coming up this Thanksgiving. And then there's some others. But, you know, Phil, I don't know where to begin, but let's just do this chronologically, because you got Masco taking on Everett at Fenway Park, which is not on Thanksgiving, but what is it, about 5 o'clock Wednesday, the night before Thanksgiving?
It is,
at Fenway.
Yes. Right off the bat, chance to play at Fenway, pretty cool. Pretty cool for us. It's the early game with deadlines. But, like I said, Fenway is it's an amazing chance for anybody to play there. It certainly adds to the aura of playing the top team in the state. Everett certainly is going to have its eyes on another Super Bowl championship that they're playing Xavarian at Gillette on December the 3rd. So Masco would love to be the stumbling block that knocks them off. And, they're obviously a big underdog in that game. Everett's been rolling everybody, but Willie, we know. We've both seen Masco, and they certainly have some very talented players that, on a given day, could make something big happen.
They're quick. They're probably not quick enough. Everett is just so fast. I mean, when you're talking 42 points against St. John's Prep at the half, Masco, this isn't Newburyport, Pawtucket, teams in the Cape Ann League. It's really, to me, disappointing that they couldn't figure out a different opponent for them. I mean, they sort of got left at the altar by North Andover when they wanted to line up with Andover, and in some ways it's sort of like shame on those Merrimack Valley teams for leaving Masco out to the hill, where they got to go play Everett now, which got left at its own altar by Cambridge when they bolted the GBL. I mean, it's
they
just
one year with Pingree, right?
Masco played Pingree one time, yeah, and
was, I forgot about that.
That was a wipeout on the other shoe, on the other foot. So, it's a great experience, and I think Masco will put some points on the board because they have some quickness and really good running backs to the outside. But, I mean, defensively, it's just such a challenge. Everett has so many weapons, and they're so fast. They're going to light up the scoreboard.
Played Lincoln Sudbury in the
Phil, put that right up a little closer.
Played Lincoln Sudbury in the playoff semifinals. They used a bit of a gadget play right off the bat to score a long touchdown run.
Let me see this for a second. I'm sorry. I think it's either off or the battery's dead. Hello? You guys should have shared that one. The battery just died. Sorry. Right. Sorry about that.
No worries. That's all right. They played Lincoln Sudbury in the playoff semifinals, used a bit of a gadget play, broke a long touchdown, Pete Katsakos right off the bat, got a three and out, scored again off a nice punt return in the short field. But then Lincoln Sudbury went up and put up 52 straight points. And certainly Everett has the capability of doing something like that, too. I think speaking to Willie's point here that Masconomet would really need to get up early, find a way to contain Everett, and hope that their starters maybe don't play the entire way, resting up a little bit for a Super Bowl bid or whatnot. But all things being said, win, lose, get blown out, whatever, being able to play in the shadow of the Green Monster is a pretty cool experience that almost no high school kid has ever gotten a chance to experience.
You stole my line. I wanted to maybe suggest that DiBiase would rest all his starters like the Marshfield coach did last Thanksgiving and maybe just lose the game going into the Super Bowl. But that probably won't happen. I'm guessing that's not his style. I don't think so. No.
I'm also guessing Everett's second string could probably beat Marshfield. So, they're pretty deep, and you know, they're pretty good. So it's the old GBL All-Star team over there, if you will.
Well, go ahead, Tim.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, to Maddie's point, you know, these guys, they end up number one almost every single year, and then they come back the next year, and there's no drop off. You know, the kids that have graduated are replaced by kids that seemingly just as good. So to that point, you know, the second string is they're as ready as the first teams, and probably even hungrier.
When it's their turn to shine, what's that famous line from a few years ago?
The microphone's a little closer.
Well,
I'm sorry, guys.
When the stars is out, the stars got to shine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And that's what it is with Everett. You know, they get on that big stage of the varsity, so to speak, and they turn the wattage up to 100.
Yeah, and you can see him going with his first team, at least in the first quarter, and you know they're going to put up points. And he's going to be satisfied with that, and knowing that his defense can hold Mascanomic back at bay. You know, and just bring in the kids.
The second team throughout the second quarter and most of the remainder of the game. I don't see it being a close game at all.
Well, and I do think it's important to say that for all of Everett's firepower, I mean, it's not like they're playing a Mickey Mouse team here. I mean, Mascanomic certainly has strength of their own. I think Matt Brockelman throws a nice ball for Masco. Peter Katsakos, Danny Monagle, nice players, skilled players for them. They just don't have enough to match Everett. And when that that avalanche gets started, it's awful tough to stop.
And it's not Everett doesn't run scores up, really. You know, despite, you know, they're good and they're going to win. They're going to put the 40 points up on the board, but they're not, you know, you're not going to see them. I mean, unless I'm missing something, they usually don't obliterate teams like they could probably do.
They don't have too many vendettas.
No, I don't think so. So, hey, let's go to another game. So, you know, when I think of Masco, I always think of Jim Pugh, but now Jim Pugh's up at Hamilton Wenham in his second year up there. He turned that around, and he's got the program humming, and they're at Ipswich, and they're going for a title. So one of the rare Thanksgiving games where something's on the line here with Coach Pugh, which I know, Phil, you've seen them a few times in the last few weeks, Hamilton Wenham, and they just had a very good season, having lost to Stoneham in the playoffs.
Well, certainly the most interesting thing is the starting quarterback, Billy Whalen, is going to be out. He's got the collarbone situation. He suffered in the playoff loss to Stoneham. And, you know, Hunter Wilichowski filled in great, threw for over 100 yards and brought Hamilton Wenham back from the brink, you know, only to lose on the last possession to Stoneham. So, you know, how is Hunter going to look with an extra week of practice? I mean, obviously he's been taking reps the whole season as the backup and you know, even more so now. And so you hope that the Hamilton Wenham offense doesn't miss a beat with Hunter there under center, but you know, you do have to wonder if that affects the game somehow. And Ipswich obviously has a really big, really physical defense. They've played a tough, hard-nosed style all season, and so you wonder if they'll be able to get up under the skills players and sort of mug them, I think, will be their game plan, like the old Patriots against the Colts, you know, try to get up under Lanciani and Peach and throw them off their routes and off their games and, you know, in a rivalry game, maybe try to get under their skin a little bit. Because Peach especially, I mean, his last high school game, I'm guessing he's going to be out there looking to put on a show, Phil. You saw him do a somersault into the end zone in one of these last games, is that right?
Yeah, he did a complete 360, flip somersault. I mean, whatever you want to call that. That was impressive. And that was a game that they, I think that was the fourth touchdown of the first quarter that they had scored.
Matt, that is like the girl at Medway inbounding it on the sidelines. Right. Yeah, she did the exact same thing.
Match. Yeah, doing a somersault on the throws.
Yeah, somersault and in. Yeah.
Is this going from football to football here? Or are we just slightly?
My apologies. Yes.
All right. Yes.
My apologies.
Because if we're talking beautiful game, we want to bring in Giannino here.
Yeah.
I think. No, I agree with Willie's point that minus Billy Whalen and what he can do for Hamilton Wenham, that changes things a bit. I think offensively, he's a good mobile quarterback. I feel like he moves the ball downfield very well and runs the offense keenly. But Wilichowski's no slouch. You know, he battled for the starting quarterback job. Played some quarterback, if I'm not mistaken, as a sophomore the year before Jimmy Pugh came in. He and Hunter and Billy went for the job last year, Jim's first year. Billy won the job. Hunter became an end. He's more now of a defensive specialist. But when they needed him to, as he said, he came in. He got that offense jump-started. I'm sure now that they've had a week plus to, or will have had a week plus to work with him in the offense, leading up to Thanksgiving. That will benefit him. For Ipswich, you know, it's funny. Ipswich has rushed for over 2,000 yards this year, and I think we often say, Willie, that they're sneaky good.
They're very good.
You know, they're 5-5, but I think that's a misleading record. They put up points on Linfield. Of course, they gave up quite a few. But some of their losses have been a little bit deceiving, I think. And I just had a chance to see them for the first time this year, last time out, and they looked great on both sides of the ball in a shutout win over Shawsheen. You know, Pat Gillis, tough kid, real tough kid. Runs between the tackles, not afraid to take on opposing guys, put his helmet down, go straight ahead. That offensive line has some really nice players on it. Aiden McAdams in the middle there is a real nice player. Peter Spinelli up front, I like him a lot. I think Tommy Heron's a good ball player. Doesn't get noticed that often. Ben Yanakakis runs the offense pretty well. If I'm not mistaken, I think they're the only team, at least in our coverage area, that have three kids with over 450 yards rushing. So there's a lot of balance on that offensive line that they have in Gillis, was it Justin Doyon and
Justin Moran.
Justin Moran, that's right, Yanakakis. Right, and he's a lot of the short yardage stuff. So, you know, Hamilton will and should be favored, but Ipswich is a sneaky play there, you know, and there is that chance for them to share the part of the title, which, geez, who wouldn't love that?
What we'll do is take a quick break here. We'll come back with more. We're at the Salem News, North Shore Sports Night. I'm Bill Newell with Tim Kearns, Rick Moore, Salem News Sports Editor Phil Stacey, and Matt Williams here from the Salem News.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat. Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender. MSONewsSports.com is your connection to North Shore news and sports. Local video and radio interviews, photos, and much more. And a daily local radio newscast on North Shore Today.
Welcome back to the Salem News, North Shore Sports Night. Phil Newell here, Tim Kearns, Rick Moore, Phil Stacey, and Matt Williams. And let's go to the Salem-Beverly game. For years, it was a great football game. We go way back, Rick and myself, when it was Hamer versus Perrone, Beverly versus Salem. Bang-out crowds, both places, year after year. It's probably hasn't been like that the last several years. Beverly's dominated the series. But something's changed this year, Phil, in that Salem's coming in with, what, a 6-4 record, I believe.
Yep.
Beverly 3-7. This is a very good Salem team. This is a team that almost knocked off Lynn English. Lynn English, you know, 9-0, went to 9-0 before they lost their first game and went into the playoffs. So this is a decent Salem team, and obviously they're home, and they've got a lot to prove, I think, or they want to make a statement on Thanksgiving.
Well, I think you're right. A statement that they've been waiting to make for a long time now. First, we were trying to figure out the last time that Salem was a so-called favorite in this game, and it has to be at least 10 years. Maybe back to when Malik Van Alstine was playing for Salem. the great running back who actually went for 302 against Beverly on Thanksgiving a few years back.
But went for 302 what?
Yeah, rushing yards.
Sorry.
I thought that's what you were saying.
Yeah, 302 rushing yards.
Holy
yeah.
Roly.
Yeah, at
Hurts
Stadium. Set the school record. Four touchdowns that day. And then, of course, he went on to a great record-breaking career at Framingham State. But I digress. Yeah, Salem is a clear, I wouldn't say clear, but they're definitely a favorite in this game. And depending on who you root for, I think you can make a case that your team should win this game. I mean, if you're Salem, you have the better record. You've played better all season, as you alluded to, Bill. They probably should have beaten English. You know, they lost on a controversial two-point play. They lost that game by a point. They've played pretty well throughout the season. They've been steady. They have one of the best rushing attacks on the North Shore, led, of course, by Vinny Gaskins, leading rusher in the area, and also the leading scorer. He's up over 100 points, isn't he, Willie, this year? 116, 118, somewhere in there.
He's 124.
124, there you go. Don't mean to cut my
I'm
man.
I'm using my Salem News from last Thursday.
Okay. I don't mean to short my man Vincent any points here. Tough up front, you know. Felix Cruz, four-year guy, started on Thanksgiving as a freshman 3 years ago. Certainly taking his lumps in this Beverly-Salem game. Now, if you're Beverly, you say, well, you know, we probably played a tougher schedule than Salem did. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Beverly seems to be playing its best ball of the season now. They've won two in a row. They've seemed to find their connection and whatnot, and I know they're really hanging their hats on, let's end the year with our best win of the year. You know, we'll go out with a three-game winning streak. We'll beat our arch rivals again. No Beverly team has ever beaten Salem 7 years in a row. So there's a lot for them to play for as well.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Phil, but I haven't talked with Coach Morency, but I did talk with Coach Bouchard, and he is this has been, I think, a really important year and season. I want to ask him about Coach Morency because it's been tough. He's had a tough personal year, a tough year with the team. But on the other side, Coach Bouchard, this seems like it's all come together for him, and the kids are feeling it.
Yeah, well, I think they have some talented athletes, both in the skill positions and in the line. And I think it's also important to know that these guys, his leaders, these guys that we're talking about, are the kids that have been with him mm-hmm. all 4 years there. They came in as freshmen. They've known nothing else. They haven't had to adjust to another system or style of play or changing of offenses or defensive alignments and things like that. So they've been drilled on this for 4 years now. And as we said, they've certainly taken their lumps. They've suffered some tough losses. But now they've had a little payback this year. And they've had some great wins over you know, certain opponents that they've lost to in the past. The cherry on top of the ice cream for them, their Super Bowl is going to be beating Beverly. I think it would exercise a lot of demons for those guys. And for Beverly, it's quite the opposite. I mean, Beverly High is not used to three-win seasons. It just doesn't happen very often. Hasn't happened in quite some time. Defending North champions from a year ago, they went on that great playoff run. You know, I don't know if anybody was expecting a repeat of that, but they certainly weren't expecting a...
Thing I mentioned how English, Salem and English were close, and that Salem almost beat English, but Beverly almost beat English too earlier in the season, and we didn't know what kind of season Beverly was going to have, and that was just a great win for English to defeat Beverly at the
time. Absolutely.
But Beverly's driving, I think, for the winning touchdown, and Matt Severance, who one of my favorite players of the year for English, you know, on defense, comes up with a huge hit, causes a fumble.
That's right. And then they ran out the clock.
And they ran it out.
He got three big first downs to them on that final drive to kind of. But the difference there is that English jumped out, I think, to like a 20-0 lead. Yeah. And they were in control of that game from the start. Beverly had a furious comeback.
Yeah.
I think Nick Berry threw for like 267 yards or something of that.
But that was their MO last year. Every game, wasn't it? Come back?
It was. Yeah. It was, but different crew this year.
Messing with things, we're back on the air now. I don't know what the heck happened.
Don't touch anything, Rick.
Look
at his hand going down. This
well, this thing went.
You want to slap it? You know.
I know.
Stop it.
Percussive maintenance. Did you mention the Danvers Beverly game as well? Because that's another game.
Another one, yeah.
That went right down to the wire, winning field goal by Danvers, and they pulled that one out.
That's right. Zach
Beverly
kicked that 38 yarder, I think, late, and that was a
very late in the game. And
I think Beverly looks at that and says, you know, we could be better than our record indicates. You know, we were right there with English. We were right there with Danvers.
I want to ask Tim. You talk with Coach Morency, so what's the feeling like over there?
Yeah, well, I talk to Coach every week, and one of the things that we always talked about was the attitude remained the same at the kids. Every day in practice was grind, get better, go out and play hard, and win the game. It seems like they were snake bit this year. Well, last year, they won those games. This year, fate went against them, and it didn't go their way. And in talking to Barry and Marshawn at the beginning of the year with the three captains, they were excited. They knew they had a good team coming into this season. And I can't imagine the collective disappointment that they felt as the L's kept mounting up. But Coach Morency kept these kids focused and with the next game. Move on to the next game. Can't do anything about what happened on Friday night or on Saturday afternoon. We got a game to get ready for, and he said they just maintained that focus. And in talking to him the other day for the Thanksgiving show, that's what he kept at. That's what he kept going at. Stressing mm-hmm. is that these kids have continued to work hard, continued to practice hard, continued to get better. And as Phil mentioned, the last couple of weeks, they've gotten those positive results. They've gotten those wins. And going into this game, I don't think there's any fear of Salem. The last time Beverly had a losing record was 2010 when they won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They lost their first five, won their next five, and then lost to Salem on Thanksgiving. So they ended up 5-6, but then they ran the table in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. Mm. So, well, you know, it'll be interesting to see because you got two teams with a tremendous amount to play for.
Yeah, clearly Beverly's one of those 3-7 teams that potentially is a lot better than 3-7. I think at that
for
point.
Sure. No, it's just it's going to be important for them to take the game seriously because these guys have never been challenged by Salem, and so they just can't. It sounds crazy to say that a 3-7 team would be overconfident, but you know you almost hope that they're not overconfident because I could see them looking at Salem's schedule and saying, well, look, if we played against Austin Prep and Saugus, you know, and some of these other teams, you know, hey, we'd be 6-4 too.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, you just hope that they're focused, and if they are, I mean, what a way to make their season it would be, and you know there's going to be a lot of focus in Salem. I remember going over there at the beginning of the year 2 years ago, and in their weight room they have a large banner picture of the scoreboard from the past few Thanksgivings, and you know they want to take it down when they win. But, of course, the last few have been mounting up, and there are some big scores there. So when those kids are doing their squats all throughout the summer looking at those scores, I mean, this is what they've been looking forward to. So you know Salem's going to have the energy, and it's just going to be important for Beverly to match that. And if they do, I think we'll have a great game that comes down in the fourth quarter.
Well, I think all the niceties will end on top of the Salem-Beverly Bridge on New Time Wednesday when they have that social meeting. Because once that's over, the game faces are going to be on for both teams, and they're going to settle, and they'll settle it where it should be settled.
Oh, there's no doubt. Salem's sick and tired of losing to those guys, and Beverly, those seniors, they don't want to be the team that loses to those guys. You imagine going to the party that night with the guys who graduated and having them say, "You lost to those guys," so that's what's up for grabs.
Oh yeah, yep.
Well, Matt, let's go to the Peabody Saugus game. Peabody's at Saugus. Peabody's strung some wins together here to close out the season here in the postseason here after you know to close out the regular season or the whatever this extra part of the season.
Yeah,
is.
Both these teams are fairly hot. It's interesting. They both started out really poor in September. You know, Peabody's won five of their last seven to get back to 5-5. And Saugus has won three in a row and four out of their last five to get I think from 0-4 to 4-6. So yeah. You know, first year coach for Saugus, Anthony Nalen, they can change their offense from a double wing to a spread. They seemed more effective to me when I saw them in the spread. And their QB Mike Mabey has 17 touchdown passes, so he's a dangerous one. So this could be a higher scoring game. You know, if Peabody can't get their pass rush going. And one of the interesting things is Peabody has not played a grass game in over a year and a half. This will be their first game on grass all year. And so you wonder if that, you know, will take some adjusting for them to get used to that. Now, of course, they practice on grass, so maybe it's not such a big deal. But you do wonder, you know, in terms of the pass rush and in terms of their offense, the speed, you know, if the grass and perhaps the mud, if it's wet, could slow things down. And if maybe that's an advantage for Saugus, having played on that sort of muck at Stackpole quite a few times this year already.
Yeah, that Stackpole, is that the last field that's grass now?
One of the last. Historic Hurd Stadium, of course, has the grass.
But there are different quality, I think, of turfs, I think.
No, I know. That's the thing. I mean, it's funny. You know, I like to joke with the Beverly
shouldn't
people.
Say that, but.
You know,
Yeah.
In the Northeast Conference.
I mean, grass. Yeah.
I like to joke with the Beverly people that, you know, you don't want to be in the same category as Saugus. You know, being the only two grass fields in the area, but no, it's true. I mean, the quality of the grass at Hurd is more like a Fenway Park. It's a soft grass. It's a beautiful grass.
Yeah.
The quality of the grass at Stackpole is probably more akin to like a Balch Park than a Fenway
little
Park.
A little lumpier over at Stackpole. But the good news is all new schools coming to Saugus. New middle school, new high school, so good for them.
That's going to be the Hurd stands alone then. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. All right, what we're going to do is step aside. We got some messages here. We'll be back. Phil Stacey, Matt Williams. I'm Bill Newell with Tim Kearns and Rick Moore from MSO.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
A great way to monitor what's happening on the North Shore? Get the MSO New Sports app. A click here, a click there, you're listening or watching North Shore football. And check out the latest stories on our webpage, msonewsports.com.
All right, we're back. I'm going to step in for Bill. We're back with North Shore Sports Center this Monday night, and I got to ask the guys, Matt and Phil, you know, for years, when Bill and I started over at WESX, and the Beverly-Salem game was the game, no matter what the records were and so on. But I know I think it was on Wednesday or something like that, the features would begin in the Salem News on Monday or the week before. But then on one day during the week, I don't know what day it was, but there's all this huge coverage about the Powder Puff Derby. And I've always read the headlines, but I don't know anything about it. What the bozo is the Powder Puff Derby, and what does that mean?
I can't say I've ever heard to it referred to as Powder Puff Derby.
Well, Powder Puff, what is it?
Game.
Powder Puff
football.
What is it?
Girls.
There you go. See? Okay, so correct me.
I coached it twice at Everett.
I saw all the question marks on your faces. I'm like, okay, what did I screw up now? So explain that to me.
Many years ago, when I had many more people at my disposal, and we had more space in the ink and the paper section of things, we would go out. I covered a couple of Powder Puff games. It's really a nice thing. It's a chance for any of the girls in the senior class. You know, and I see that Beverly and Salem still do it. I think Marblehead and Swampscott. I wouldn't be surprised if English and Classical will do it.
Yeah.
But they will, you know, they don't have to be athletes. It can be from any walk of life at the school. Senior female student at the school will play touch football against your rivals. And usually the football players will reverse roles, and they'll be the cheerleaders.
Okay,
sometimes they'll dress up. I'm going way back, and you were a player, so you would remember, Willie. But did you guys ever do that?
Never
did that? Okay, well, in Beverly.
Saugus wasn't interested.
They do it at Salem, I know.
Yeah, I mean, the football guys, when I was in school, would wear the cheerleading outfits, and that was pretty funny, you know, to see somebody with a pair of untied Herman Survivor boots with a short plaid mini skirt and a
black sweater with a megaphone and a big orange bee on it.
But so they could pull it off, though. That, you know, hey, it's a look.
You
it's
know,
a good look.
I'm not, you know.
No, they do. I think they do. Yeah.
When I was, you know, I'm not judging anybody. You know?
My, I actually think my two losses to Revere when I was in Everett cost me my teaching job.
after the powder puff game.
After the second loss, I actually turned to the superintendent and went, is this going to cost me my job? And I was just kidding.
Was it still Fred Forrester back then?
Yeah.
It did. I can tell you the truth.
You know, but it was a lot of fun. The girls take it real serious.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we practiced real hard. We practiced like for an hour and a half, 2 hours every day for like a week and a half. And they
trick plays and, you know.
Oh, yeah. They had no – basically had no idea. Okay, everybody go that way. Okay. But, I mean, we had a lot of fun.
But you find out that one standout soccer player who can cut and make a move and – has you know, soft hands to maybe catch a pass over the middle or something like that. It's something else.
No, I tell you, they take great pride in
it. Is a festive event.
Well.
Oh, it is definitely a festive.
Oh yeah, and there are lots of people that go and watch it.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
So I think Marblehead's won four in a row, right, over Swampscott. I think I did
you
catch that
be
one.
Yeah, giving me that news.
That's a
yes.
lot of that's
girls or the boys.
The girls. The girls
probably have too.
Their boys probably have too. Well, that's a great lead-in to talk about Swampscott Marblehead.
That's called a segue.
That is, yeah. That's a transition. Inside that's a transition. Text, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Marblehead Swampscott. That should be another great game, I think. Wouldn't you say so?
I like it. I mean, we'll see. I think.
Let's take the mic.
Two, 3 weeks ago, I thought it would be a pretty good game. I think Swampscott was really disappointing against Gloucester, and that was a tough loss. And maybe altered, maybe altered my pick for the game when you pick up the Salem News on Wednesday afternoon and find out all our sports writers' picks. Because a few weeks ago, I was leaning towards Team Sereno, but now I might have to choose Team Rudloff after that performance.
But we're playing Gene. We got to make some ground here.
I thought I saw that in the paper. Who's winning
Gene DePlacido is ahead, but you know she's going to take the prep and they're probably going to lose. So that's an opportunity to make up some ground. But I will, before we get back.
I am coming off.
Mike, give him the mic. Go back and
I'm
forth.
I'm coming
then.
Off literally the worst week I've ever had in like, I don't even know how long we've been doing these picks. Absolute. I had a losing record last week, didn't I?
I believe you. Yeah,
absolutely.
Who did you pick?
Horrific.
And he cost me a game with some misinformation.
That's true. I got some misinformation.
Fake news.
Yes, I absolutely got some fake news. And I passed it along to Willie. Not that I had him use it, not myself. We both did. But we got some bad info that was a tough loss for us. And then, who else did I lose?
I can't believe how good you guys actually do, though. You guys do really well from week to week.
See this thing on my chest here?
34?
No.
The Shamrock.
Yeah, that's all it is, just luck.
Okay.
And it's a good-looking sweatshirt, if I don't say so
myself.
It is.
For this group, it's clean.
Yeah, well, that's true. Okay. That's half the battle. And considering I have to do my own laundry, that's doubly amazing. But... yeah, terrible week in the picks. I think I took Danvers. They got beat by Bill Ricca. What are the bad picks I make? Oh, God, I made some
Marblehead.
Terrible picks. I took Marblehead. I took Hamilton Wenham.
Triton.
We
all lost that one. Fenwick laid an egg against Triton.
No, I think I took Triton, didn't I? That might have been the one of the few that I got right. Pingree beat a team that we thought they were going to get beaten by. So I feel like I'm out of it. So to get back to the original point here, I'm going to go like nutso on the picks. Like, why not? I'm already out of the running, so it doesn't matter.
Just a quick aside before we get back to the Marblehead Swampscott game, too. You know, people.
And we will.
So that,
yeah.
So that they understand these picks now. So we're competing to try to win, okay? So, right. Yeah. So you got to understand if I'm behind, you know. If I'm behind Gene, say, by three games, if I don't pick three games different from her, then I don't have a chance to win. So for all you fans out there that think I'm just picking against your team, I might actually think your team's going to win, but I have to make a different pick
the disclaimer.
To try to make up the ground.
The disclaimer.
Standards.
Okay.
So that's the
key. What is at stake at the end of the season?
Bragging rights.
That's it.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. Okay. T-shirts.
So it's a couple of bragging rights.
Yeah.
People think that we have, like, some elaborate you know, I've heard people say, is there a trophy? Is there, like, money that goes to the person?
Vacation.
Wins, which we could have thought of years ago.
Holiday bonus.
A dinner. You know, yeah. You know, hey, if you want a few Jolly Ranchers out of my drawer and you win, knock yourself out. Yeah, right. And maybe we go from a small to an extra large fry or something like that. But I am still shocked at how many people, like, get upset when we pick against them. It really boggles mind that, you know, I don't want to say they're not these are throwaways, because we do obviously put some thought into it. And, you know, if people want to look at us as the so-called experts, and I hate to use that word, but if we know what we're talking about as far as this stuff goes, you want them to come to us and say, like, oh, geez, Willie thinks that St. John's Prep's going to beat Xaverian. Like, they must have a good chance. You don't want to seem foolish. But at the same time, it's not like life or death with these things.
Phil, was it you and I talking a few weeks ago about this same thing where it used to be in the paper, you'd have, because I remember a story, I'll tell you a story in a second, but you used to have the pick and then a comment under it. You don't do the comment anymore, right?
Only for the upset.
Only for the upset, which okay. I came up with maybe, what, 10 years ago when everybody was making the same picks every week. I'm like, we got to shake this up a little bit. So now you're going to make an upset pick. You're going
to
go.
Because the comments, to me, that was the dig that some people didn't like.
You know, I think,
like,
that was the item that would do that. You know,
Does that too? We used to have that.
Mike,
hold
up.
We used to have that sometimes in the locker room when we played. The Globe would have little comments. So that happens sometimes.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
But the other thing that is a throwaway sometimes that people don't understand is the score. So I've had times where I pick a team to win, and you know, the score you sort of pick, like, how close it is, but you don't put too much thought on the numbers. So I'll put, like, you know, this team's going to win 28-24. I'll have a defensive coordinator come up to me before the game. You think we're going to give up 24 points and be all upset? So, you know, Phil's right. The picks themselves aren't throwaways, but sometimes the scores are.
Yeah, but
sometimes not. I mean, I have an inkling that one team is going to blast another this Thanksgiving. And I'm not giving out any names, but you know,
that we would believe you anyways.
Yeah, true.
Sitting your current record, yes.
But I think, in fact, aren't we both of the same mindset there, that we were talking how one team may just, like, crush their opponents?
It could be.
And it may or may not reflect in the picks, you know, I mean. But there are some people out there.
Packers, right?
No.
Without Rodgers, that could be a problem.
No. But, you know, there are people out there. And some people, I hate to say, take it too seriously. And they're clowns about this stuff, and they complain about, you know, the score or the coverage. I mean, give me a break. Like, this is all for fun. It's high school sports. We do it to, you know, we think we know what we're doing. Half the time we're right, half the time we're not. As long as the stories are accurate and all, I mean, the picks to me are just like a fun byproduct of the game. I get people asking us literally every year, why don't you put point spreads in? It's like, well, because this isn't Las Vegas, and and it's high school football. So, and I know I've seen for years and years and years, there have been high school football, those, what do you call them, cards.
Yeah, the cards, yeah.
You know,
God,
that people want to bet
still
on the games.
Are around?
So, yeah, I see them every year.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the degenerates that I associate with. But, yeah, people want to know what the lines are, and I say they're whatever you want them to be, you know, so.
We argue enough about the picks themselves. If we were trying to argue about, you know, I should get credit for that, they covered the spread, that wouldn't be too good for the office.
Oh, yeah.
I made up that spread and you won it. That's not fair.
Beverly over Salem, but that's cover the spread.
This has devolved into Jimmy the Greek, Sid Caesar stuff. Let's get back to Marblehead Swampscott.
Well, are we done with Marblehead Swampscott?
No, I don't think we've started. We really talked about it.
Yeah.
Let's just move on.
No, well, you know, I mean, you get 9-1, 7-3 teams. You know, and again, that's a blood game. It's Salem. It's Salem Beverly. Okay, it's classical English. These are long-standing traditional rivalries.
And you know, I'll take that a step further. I think most of these teams, you can say, like, they're arch rivals. You know, and they don't like each other. That may be a little overblown. In this case, I don't think that's overblown. Mm. I really don't think they like each other. And honestly, I think that's awesome. As somebody that is an outside observer, I think that's fantastic. That brings out the best in both teams.
Sure.
And I'm not promoting, like, oh, you should hate your fellow, you know, team or whatever, but I just think it's awesome.
For that one day.
Yeah.
The hate could be worth. The 100th anniversary game, I was calling in updates from the game, and Steve Buckley from the Herald came in. I said, why did you come here? He goes, I pick a game every year to go to. And they said, this was the 100th anniversary of this game. He said, I had to be here. Mm. And I just happened to have a seat next to him. I called him up. We sat down. I got a chance to interview him during the course of the game. Mike Lynch was right down in front of us with his family.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that game is probably one of the, besides the Beverly Salem game,
well, as they used to be, that game, even still today, is probably the best attended game on the North Shore.
Well, I mean, when Steve Dombowski was coaching there, he literally wouldn't write the word Marblehead on their schedule. He would say, you know, November 26th or whatever the date was, the next town over. He literally would not write Marblehead on the Swampscott schedule. He despised them that badly. And the feeling is just the same in Marblehead. You know, Marblehead loses to Melrose in the North Final a week and a half ago. And I said to Jimmy Rudloff, the coach, well, you know, you do have one game left. He goes, yeah, and we really want to, and, you know, like some things I shouldn't say here, but
beep.
Defeat yeah. Swampscott. Like, yeah. That will make us feel a lot better about this game. So that that ill will is palpable between the two schools. And I think when it comes out on the field, in this case, Piper Field, Thursday morning, you'll see the best in both teams.
Yeah, there's no doubt. A lot of touchdown passes for Swampscott. That's the only thing. You know, is Marblehead perhaps has struggled to defend the spread at times this year. They saw it in the second half of their playoff win over, who was that team?
Wilmington, was it?
Wilmington. Mm-hmm. And they got lit up pretty good.
Anybody making picks?
They got lit up pretty good by Melrose. Yeah. And, you know, Jimmy mentioned it to me, like, hey, we haven't seen the spread this year, and so we're not necessarily caught up. Now, the flip side of that is, well, now they've been working on it for 3 weeks, so they're probably a heck of a lot better than they were in that second half against Wilmington. But Swampscott's got pretty good skill on the outside. Frary's got 30-something touchdown passes, which is the second most in program history behind only Kyle Beatrice, so he's looking to go out with a bang. They got a pretty good team that's never beaten Marblehead, and so that's the that's what they're trying to hang their hats on, and so just like the Beverly guys, Marblehead is going to have to rise to that occasion. A team that not only has never lost to Swampscott, but has never really had a close game against them. So
Matt, what about the lines? Because you mentioned all the skilled players, but mm-hmm. I haven't seen Swampscott. I've seen Marblehead a number of times, and their line seems to be underrated because
yes.
On defense they're excellent.
I would agree. They're not a big group. But they're very strong and they're fairly quick. I think Swampscott has a slight advantage in the size department with especially the big tackles, Quest and Correa. But strength-wise, quickness-wise, it goes to Marblehead. And perhaps in terms of endurance, it goes to Marblehead. So that'll be interesting because, you know, there were times in the playoff loss to Watertown that Swampscott was a little bit gassed. I think they used most of the same guys on both sides. As does Marblehead, but they probably have a rotation of six or seven guys, and some of their down linemen on offense play linebacker on defense, which is just a little bit different energy, and so they don't wear down as much, whereas all of Swampscott's down guys on offense are also down on defense, and it just takes a little bit more out of your legs. So it's interesting. I think Swampscott's got a little bit of size advantage, which should help them stopping the run on defense, but quickness-wise, they're at a disadvantage, which may hurt and help Marblehead's pass rush.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a great point. You mentioned those Swampscott, those linemen, Career and Sheehan and guys like that, and the linebackers. I really like Dylan January as a player. I think he's a tough kid.
Gigantic.
Yep, tough. And he's only going to get better, too. I mean, he's a young guy. He's going to get better. Dom Cottespotty, hockey guy.
He's a big guy.
He
big.
Plays
I
really
mean,
well.
Play.
Yep.
Maybe the MVP of their defense.
Yeah,
Baskin,
really
Baskin
good player.
Good, you know.
I haven't said all that. Marblehead's defense, I mean, I don't think people realize. They've only given up something like, what, 12 points a game? 13 points a game. They are tough. And you know who I'm going
to
butcher his name here, but Obinna Okori.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really nice player for them in the middle of that that defense that they have. I think Will Bosworth's a tough kid there. Tyrese Hardy plays really, really well. Of course, Aiden Gillis, who honestly could garner MVP votes in the league, I think. He's that much of a difference maker for them. Big number 52 at linebacker. So that's a fascinating matchup, I feel like. That Swampscott attack where they like running the you know, the curl passes and the hitch and go, and they do really well with stuff over the middle. But that Marblehead defense is just so fast to the ball, as Willie alluded to, and they get a lot of hats on the ball very quickly. Swampscott is going to have to find a way not only to get open in space, but then yards after the catch are really going to have to be important for them to have any kind of sustained offensive success.
So this is to you and to Matt. I was looking at the numbers from the paper, and Marblehead's only given up 100 points. They've only scored 217. Swampscott has scored 334 points. How much of a factor is the tearing
playing into all that?
Well, this
it matters. You know, I mean,
you know, Swamps get beat, I think, what, Greater Lawrence to start the season. In fact, I remember second game of the season they beat Triton. And at that point, I think they had scored something like 92 points in the first two games of the season. Never done that before in program history. They were off to their best start. It's obviously the quality of the opponents that they play. You know, they're playing a down Winthrop team. They're playing Saugus, which was down until they won their last three in a row here. They beat Salem pretty good at the time. So they've put up a lot of points against teams that Marblehead didn't have to play. But having said that, this has not been a traditional Marblehead powerhouse offensive team. I mean, think about it. Your quarterback, who has had a very good season in his own right, Andy Clough, but he's more suited as an end. You know, he's 6 foot seven. He's the fourth kid they used at quarterback this year, and it's worked out very well. I mean, he's a big body. I think he runs well. He throws a better ball than you would think. But they don't have that Brooks Tyrell in the backfield or someone like that that's a big-time game-breaker. You know, Derek Marino is a dynamic receiver, but he probably gets, what, five targets a game, maybe?
Yeah,
just in,
I mean, they just don't throw it as much. But I will say, you know.
And I like Timmy Cronin, the sophomore. I think he's going to be really good, the running back. But he needs to put on weight, and he needs to get a little older.
Well, I think two really things here. You know, number one, the Marblehead running game didn't really find its ilk until Cronin emerged in the postseason. And that may have been, you know, no inside information here, but I wonder if because he's a sophomore, you know, Marblehead was hiding him a little bit. You know, that they wanted to give him those carries in November when it counted instead of wasting him in September. And the other thing is, you know, I wouldn't look into the schedule too much because Marblehead just plays everybody close. It's just a Bill Belichick, do your job, Al Davis, just win, baby kind of thing. I mean, just look at Malden.
With the exception of Beverly, though. They did blow out Beverly.
They only scored 30-something, though, right? They didn't even
to
get
nothing.
To the 40s.
30-0.
You know, just look at Malden. They scored 24 points against Malden. That's less than everybody else in the league.
And Beverly
not a good team, scored 50 against Malden. So, I mean, they just don't. This is just not the type of Marblehead team that scores a lot of points. And that's okay. You know, that you can still win games. But, you know, I wouldn't read too much into the schedule because even last year against Triton, that Swampscott scored a boatload of points on. I mean, Marblehead with a great, great team, I think only scored in the 20s against them.
Yeah, it was a different.
They just don't. Marblehead, for whatever reason, just plays to the level of its opponents, does what it needs to do to win, and gets out.
Yeah,
they control the game. They don't like to play pinball. They like to play winning football.
And we're going to take a break. Before we go, let me just address your point, Phil, that getting older and putting on weight is not all it's made out to be, by the way. Just I can speak to that.
I suppose when you're 15 or 16, it maybe isn't such a
There you go. Okay.
Sometimes
you make a statement and you know.
I'm not talking about.
I just think there could be somebody out there in
I'm
their
not
50s
talking about
listening.
You gentlemen in your early 30s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Phil, before we break, I know these guys have to go, but maybe you could promote what's coming up this week, what we can look for in the sports pages.
Yeah, I mean, we are profiling all the games in our readership area, which would be 9 if we include the games we've talked about, the Amherst Gloucester, Essex Tech Northeast, Fenwick St. Mary, St. John's Prep Xaverian, the conference games we do, obviously, Marblehead Swampscott, PBD Saugus, Beverly Salem, who am I forgetting, Hamilton and Ipswich and Masco Everett.
That's everybody,
I think. So profile all of those. We'll have we usually have a football Friday leading into the week with the leaders and what to watch for and buy the numbers, things like that. That'll be football Wednesday this week. We got a special little thing running Thanksgiving Day, talking to, I don't want to give too much away, but just talking to some of our seniors about playing their last game and what it means to them and whatnot. It's a nice morning of read if you have a chance to get the paper or read online. And then, of course, we'll have everything blanketed day of, complete coverage of all the games. We'll get somebody at all of our games that we cover here at the newspaper. Photos at 5 or 6 different games, I want to say, 5 different games maybe this year. And, you know, we'll be tweeting throughout the games. We'll have all your information next day, complete blanket coverage, game story recaps, heroes, under-the-radar guys, photos, whatnot. And then we'll wrap everything up over the weekend and even into next week. We'll probably run a full stats package wrapping up the season where we don't have anybody moving on to a Super Bowl. So in that sense, it's a little bit easier for us to wrap things up easier.
Rick, so we can let these guys go.
Yep.
Let's take two more minutes here before we take a break.
Okay.
Let's just do Gloucester-Danvers. So,
yeah.
Phil, you know Danvers.
And
Matt, you were alluding to the Swampscott-Gloucester score a moment ago, but just some take on how you guys see that game this week.
Yeah, I think Danvers' biggest strength is their toughness. Toughness in the line. They are undersized. They'll be smaller than Gloucester. They've been smaller than everybody they played this year. But the toughness, both physical and mental, that they have shown throughout the course of the season, I think has borne tremendous fruit for them. They've played much better than I would have expected them to this season, which is a real testament not only to the players themselves, but Coach Ryan Nolan and his staff, the job that they've done, instilling that feeling of we're going to win. It doesn't matter who we play. It doesn't matter how we're going to play. I mean, aside from the game they lost to Melrose, Marblehead's toughest test was against Danvers. That was the game you were at, right? 10-7 dogfight, I want to say, for the conference crown. I like Justin Mullaney. He's a quarterback. He may not get a lot of headlines. He's not super flashy, but he gets the job done. Matt McCarthy, really talented running back, a junior. I see him having a big year next fall. And, kids like Zach Dillon up front for them, really tough kid. Abatessa is a nice player for them. They've even got some freshmen that have helped out all season. Kid like Andrew Cronus, who's played in the line all year as a freshman, really bright future for him. So toughness is what I like a lot about Danvers. Considering it's also a trade of gloss, that should make for a terrific game Thursday.
You know, I was going to say, Phil, you were describing how I would describe Gloucester, too. I think this is going to be an evenly matched bloodbath, although, Gloucester is missing some key players once again.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you look at Classical, right? Very good 8-win team, and both Danvers, Danvers went 1-1 against them, and Gloucester pushed them to the brink there in that game. The tale of two halves up there in Gloucester earlier this season. So sort of using that as a barometer, I think these are two very, very evenly matched teams. I think, from what I've seen from Danvers, they're pretty clutch. They play well in close games. They're very comfortable in close games, and I think Gloucester is too. And, I think it could come down to a special teams player too. I mean, Danvers, if you shank a punt and give them a short field, they almost always take advantage. So you got to make sure that all your I's are dotted and T's are crossed, so to speak, when you go up against these guys.
Both teams came back to win fourth quarter games against Beverly. I think Gloucester beat them 19-15, and we had mentioned earlier, Rick, that Danvers beat them 24-21. So they know how to win those games late, as Willie said. And I thought Nick Kukuru wrote a great piece earlier this week, both in the Gloucester Times and the Salem News, about how what had been a one-sided rivalry in Gloucester's favor for so long has really now become maybe the most even game on the North Shore because both teams do mirror each other, and it's the team that wins that battle in the trenches, and as hokey as that sounds, that ends up winning because if you win the physical battle, you're going to win on the scoreboard at the end of the day.
All right, so what we'll do, gentlemen, thank you so much. I know you guys
are
back to work.
Appreciate it.
And thanks for joining us, Phil Stacey and Matt Williams.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy your turkey, and go teams.
Yep, sounds good. We'll be back in just a moment with a quick wrap on a couple of things and tell you what's up for us on Thanksgiving as well. So stay with us right here on North Shore Sports Night.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Compelling exhibits, thought-provoking programs, all celebrating Lynn's past while promoting a vision for its future. I'm Drew Russo, Executive Director of the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts, and I invite you to visit our campus located in the heart of the downtown Lynn Cultural District with galleries at 590 Washington Street and 25 Exchange Street. Currently, we are featuring the Vision Place of Souls, Civil War landscapes by local artist Jeff Fioravanti through December 22nd at the museum, and rotating shows from local artists in the Lynn Arts Gallery. We're open Tuesdays to Fridays 10 to 4 and Saturdays 9 to 1. Visit us online at lynnmuseum.org.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linway in Lynn.
Welcome back to North Shore Sports Night. Now it's just us. I'm Bill Newell with Tim Kearns and Rick Moore. Our broadcast plans for Thanksgiving Day, we will have live video streaming of the Gloucester-Danvers game, 10 o'clock from Newell Stadium. We'll have radio coverage of the Lynn Classical Lynn English game up on Channel A. We've been there the last number of years, Tim. It's been a great game, and this year we've saved that one to last to talk about because it should be a fantastic game this year. Both teams having such great years, both classical and English. So there's a lot on the line there. And our own Marty Smith will be in Salem on Thanksgiving to provide updated reports on the Beverly-Salem game. And that really could be a great game, too, because Phil and Matt were alluding to, this Beverly team, they did play a tougher schedule, but it should be a pretty evenly matched game on Thanksgiving over in Salem.
So how do you guys look at classical English?
Well, classical is top of tier two with an 8-2 record. English is 9-1, leading tier three. But those tiers right now don't mean anything. This is an intercity rivalry. It's one of the only intercity rivalries around. Intracity, I should say, not intercity. Everybody else is intercity. Mm. This is one within the confines of Lynn. It used to be West Lynn, East Lynn when Bill and I were growing up, and you looked at it that way. It was the dividing line, and you went and you sat on one side of the stadium or the other. And on Thanksgiving, as I've told you, there was usually more action underneath the stands than there was on the field to play between the two sides. This is a match I think that a lot of people have been waiting to see all year long, with the way the two teams were touted at the beginning of the year. Classical was started off really well. English just started on a roll and stayed on the roll, and everybody kept thinking, and I kept saying, boy, I said it the first weekend when we saw both classical and English, if these guys continue to play like this, I can't wait to see Thanksgiving Day. And now it's upon us.
Here we are.
And we're going to see who has bragging rights in Lynn for the next year. Two teams that match up really well. Really good quarterbacks. Really good receivers. Strong running backs. Big physical lines. And they haven't made a lot of the dumb mistakes that they've made in seasons past that have allowed them to take losses that they probably should not have had. This year, they've played much cleaner. They've played much smarter, both teams, and it reflects in the fact that one is 9-1 and the other is 8-2. So I'm looking for the war of wards, that Lynn hasn't seen in quite a while between these two teams.
The other thing, too, that to add is the defenses for both teams have just played outstanding team defense from the start of the year. I mean, right from the start of the year until now. And they didn't make, they make the kind of stops against teams that win make those stops, And so, I know they struggled. English struggled against, it wasn't Bill Ricca. What was the last one? They beat Bill Ricca, right? Why am I blanking out here?
No.
Tewksbury, right.
The bane of the Northeast Conference.
Yeah, yep. Right, yep. Exactly. So, but Prince Brown was basically hurt that game, but their defense has just done a fantastic job, as has the classical defense from the start of the season. So we'll see how that plays out as well. I think we'll probably see some trick plays too, maybe. I think we'll see something there.
I think you're going to have to, because both teams are so fast laterally. From sideline to sideline, very few teams have been able to get around the corner successfully on either classical or English during the course of the season. They're just that fast. And the first man is slowing the runner down, and then there's two guys
to finish off. It's been amazing to see that collective tackling mentality on both sides of the ball for Classical and Inlinghurst this year. They've been really both fun to watch.
And going back to the Swampscott Marblehead game, here's Swampscott having a great year themselves in a way. Again, they've stumbled. It wasn't perfect. But they're going to make that a game on Thanksgiving, and we've already spent some time on Salem-Beverly, so that looks to be a decent game as well. So it's been a while since you could say that, about – I know you and I have kind of come away year after year from the English Classical game saying, well, it's a great game, but they're coming in with two wins, you know. But it was a good game.
But again, this is, Thanksgiving is the day that you throw out all the team records because this is about the pride of winning on Turkey Day. It's the bragging rights against your neighbor for the next year. And it's for every team, you're looking to win that last game to send your seniors away as winners and also to set the tone for your underclassmen going into the next year. This is what you can do next year, but you have got to start in the weight room tomorrow. That's
you're talking to me? Oh, yeah. I'm in there. Yeah. I'm in there.
Yeah.
I mean, the day after Thanksgiving.
Me, you, and Phil.
Yeah,
right after
we'll be in the weight room. Yeah.
Before we go, I want to mention next Monday night we will have Barry Hanrahan on. Barry was scheduled for tonight. He's a Gloucester High School graduate, assistant general manager of the Philadelphia Flyers, and I appreciate Barry taking the time to reschedule with us as I just wasn't able to technically do it from Salem tonight. But we'll have Barry on next week. We're going to start a little early, Tim, if you're coming over. We'll start around 6:45 as Barry Hanrahan will be attending the Flyers game that night.
I'll have another phone so you can text.
So the So the buffet will be a little earlier.
Yeah, we're going to start a little early.
I got you. Okay.
Yep. And
right.
Cocktail hours a little early. So yeah.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Just to let you know.
So get there early. It's
cocktail sauce, no shrimp.
No shrimp, just a cocktail. That's right.
The delivery. The delivery will come a little earlier. The takeout. All right, well, I think that's it, right?
Yeah, we're just Thursday morning. We'll all be on early, bright and early.
Right.
Yes, sir.
That's it. Us on Thursday morning, bright and early.
Bright and early.
Bright and early.
Bright and early. Have to beat the Lynn traffic.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so that's next.
The Salem-Beverly Bridge.
And hey, I was on Rantoul Street today in your town of Beverly. Look, that's looking pretty good now, Tim, Rantoul Street.
I've been afraid to go there.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of Rantoul Street.
Well, there's new pavement, yes. There's new sidewalks. Yeah, it's amazing that they've brought it back into the 20th century. But give another month, they'll start tearing it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does look very nice. I heard that they're going to rename it Wendover Road pretty soon because Wendover owns all those apartment buildings that are being built down there and most of the ones that have already been built. So, I mean, the Wendover owns, and that's not enough. They've committed to, again, building housing in Beverly. But they own the property where Kelly Ford is. Uh-huh. And Kelly Ford will be moving, and Wendover is intending to tear down Thomas Ford and build another apartment building.
Features. We've got more features coming up this
week. Oh, yeah. We've got more features coming up. We've got Danvers Gloucester features, Classical English features coming up, some other things as well. We'll talk with some other people about Thanksgiving football. So check back on the website. We've got a bunch up there. Hamilton, Wenham, Salem, Beverly, Winthrop, with opening with a brand-new stadium with Miller Field. It's been all refurbished. They're still working on it, but they'll be playing on it on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, sure. I was hoping that they would have that done in order for them to play on Thanksgiving. So, that's going to be a motivational point for the kids. And, again, something to, again, you point down the road.
All right. That's Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, the voice of the North Shore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Thanks to the men here at the Salem News, Phil Stacey, the Salem News sports editor, and, of course, Matt Williams, the super sports writer and assistant sports editor of the Salem News. On behalf of everybody, appreciate your listening. Thanks a lot. This is MSONewsSports.com.